This is the Steve Cochran Show.
This started out tonight being a small little concert. And then we had the idea, maybe we'll do it in front of the Lincoln Memorial. I don't know if it's ever been done before, but if it has, very seldom. It's a movement that started, and it's a movement like we've never seen anywhere in the world, they say. We're going to bring our jobs back. We're not going to let other countries take our jobs any longer. We're going to build up our great military. We're going to strengthen our borders. We're going to do things that haven't been done for our country for many, many decades, because they forgot about a lot of us. On the campaign, I called it the forgotten man and the forgotten woman. Well, you're not forgotten anymore. I don't care, frankly, if it's going to be beautiful or if it's going to rain like crazy. Makes no difference to me. I have a feeling it's going to be beautiful. All over the world they're talking about it. It's going to change. I promise you. If I go crazy, then will you still call me Superman? If I'm alive and well, will you be there? I'm holding my hand. I'll keep you by my side with my superhuman might. Kryptonite.
Three doors down. You can't just get them for anything. You got to win the presidency. Bizarre concert on the mall. But today is the day, kids. At noon today. You know, the greatest thing about America is anything's possible. You know, the worst thing about America is anything's possible.
True that.
But today at noon, Donald J. Trump will become the 45th president of the United States. And now don't laugh, because I'm going to tell you the truth. I've said it. And I'll say it again, I'm rooting for him. I'm rooting for him because that's the only choice.
You have to, isn't it?
That's choice A.
Yeah.
There is no B. I hope he is the best president in American history. I hope I've never been more wrong about anything in my life. I hope he stuns me, surprises me. As Chris Matthews once said, I hope I feel a tingle up my leg whenever Trump is in TV, on TV, or on the radio, or in the world. You know, and by the way, he's welcome here. He's the president of the United States. I give him a very respectful interview. Mike Madigan's welcome here, too. Different interview.
Who do you think would say yes first?
I don't think either one's coming, but I just want them to know that once you know they're both welcome here. I wrote a new blog last night with heartfelt, straightforward, but legitimate advice for the incoming president. And the lead in the blog is, and it's going to shock you, Trump has never asked me for advice. Mm. And I don't see it happening anytime soon again. But I forwarded it to the appropriate channels, and I hope he reads it instead of his speech today. Or along with his speech today.
He might read it. You don't know.
Yeah, and I'll give you a few highlights from it later, but you're invited to read it as well. Is that up yet, Samrick? The blog is up? You can see it at WGNradio.com and wherever WGN blogs are. And on Facebook, it's Steve Cochran Show, and we'll put it up on Twitter if we haven't already at Cochran Show.
By the way, did you read the letters yesterday that the former presidents have all handwritten to each other? They released the...
Yeah, those are great moments.
Yeah, the Bush to Clinton,
yeah.
And then the
those are great moments.
Bush to Obama. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Rather Clinton to Bush, yeah. Really good.
It'd be interesting to see what President Obama leaves for President Trump. Outside of good friggin' luck. Today is a day of celebration. Today is a day that other countries envy, at least peace-loving people in other countries envy. When the outgoing president and the incoming president get in the same car and ride to the Capitol, walk out. And I've been lucky enough to be where the speech takes place today. At Clinton's inauguration in 92, I was standing in the tunnel, and the senator from Minnesota, I was in KDWB in Minneapolis at the time, and the senator from Minnesota, Rudy Boschwitz, walked me and a couple others out to the podium where the incoming president, in that case it was President Clinton, would give his speech. And it is an awesome sight. So when you walk out, you don't just see your family and political big shots to your left and right. You see the VIPs in the front row. And you see literally hundreds of thousands of people going all the way back to the Washington Monument. And if you haven't already gotten a sense of how big a deal it is, you do then. I hope his speech is great today. I hope he has a great day today. This is, by the way, this is a dangerous day. And I don't mean a dangerous day politically, but for various nuts around the world who want to test us and test our security, there's nothing like that moment of a transfer of power to do that. So security is on a higher alert status today. And one of the things in the top six at six, which I'll get to right now, and you can call in to be Lou Manfredini's first call now, if you're willing to hold on for a few minutes, at 312-981-7200. But General Mattis and General Allen will both be confirmed by the Senate earlier this morning prior to the noon inauguration. And the reason is you have to have a defensive A-team ready to go if decisions have to be made in short notice, if America is under some sort of threat. Now, there's five others that the Trump folks hoped would be cleared today. They won't be, but they could be cleared early to the middle of next week. Here's the rest of your top six at six. We'll give you all the inauguration day details, and of course, you'll hear much of it here later. El Chapo has been extradited to New York. Could have come here. Frankly, I'm glad he didn't. But he still may end up here, but for now, he will be appear in a court in Brooklyn this morning. The government of Mexico did not want to deal with Donald Trump on this, and they wanted to extradite him while Obama was still in office. That happened yesterday. The massive women's march in D.C. and across America, including here in Chicago, which Andrea will cover later today, is on. And it's said that the number of marchers for the women in D.C. have taken up as many, if not more, hotel rooms than the people there to actually see the inauguration. So I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of that is, but it's going to be a big deal. Now, the Chicago march was supposed to be a smaller group. Now it's big, and it's been moved, I think, for a third time. So yeah. Where will you be today?
It's been moved. Oh, the march is on Saturday. So the
it's tomorrow.
Yeah, the march is okay. Tomorrow. It's been moved several times. It's going to be starting kind of near the train station and ending up by Union Station, and then it's going to end up in Grant Park. So we'll give you all the specifics throughout the morning as well where that's going to be. They're expecting they literally thought there was going to be about 20,000, and that number is quadrupled.
You're going to be
probably more
covering it for Channel 9 tomorrow?
Yes,
okay.
Covering it for us and for Channel 9 tomorrow.
A couple more things in the top six at six. There may be an Illinois budget deal next week. It will be ugly. It will involve taxes, and it will involve major cuts to things you don't want cut. There's no way around it. But the question is, will it clear Madigan's regular blockage of anything that could make us healthier? We'll find out. And Alan Thicke is going to be honored at NHL All-Star Weekend next weekend. Alan Thicke, a Canadian and a hockey lover, and will be honored next week. All right, we'll get to Lou, and the first question for Lou's first call, coming up here in just a few minutes, in honor of Mark Carmen being here all week. We'll allow him to have the first whiny staff question if he has any.
Oh,
are you still a landlord? Do you still own a building or something?
I do. I actually got an email from Handyman Pat this morning. Steve, would you like me to read it to you? It's very detailed on all the things that need to be done. Trees and stuff are...
No, I don't really care about any of it. But if you'd like to pick any of those out to ask Lou Manfredini, you're certainly welcome to do that.
It's Lou's first call with Lou Manfredini and Steve Cochran. Brought to you by American Weathermakers.
American Weathermakers. We won't be comfortable until you are.
It's the time of the show.
Live from Channel 9, Lou Manfredini. Good morning, buddy.
Good morning, sir.
How are you?
I'm terrific.
Excellent. Tom from Algonquin standing by, and he's got a question for you. Let's go there now. Tom, you're the first caller and a big winner.
Good morning.
Congratulations, Captain Excitement.
Thank you.
Tom, you are a big winner. You have won an April Air Wi-Fi thermostat, along with the joy that you're feeling now, that you're expressing. This will allow you to adjust your temperature of your home's air on your smartphones. Brought to you by American Weathermakers, home of the 60 Minute Men. Call 855-955-HVAC. Your question for Lou is?
My question is, I have a hot water boiler system that heats my house. And earlier in the year, the pressure relief valve was leaking. I had it replaced. And now, and he's came out to redrain the system, I've got this pinging throughout the house, all the registers along the baseboards.
Oh, I bet that's fun.
It's annoying. You lose a lot of sleep over it.
Are they cast iron baseboards or metal fin tube?
Metal fin tubes.
Okay. And how handy of a guy are you?
decent. Yeah.
All right, so turn that boiler on, you know, turn it up to like 80 degrees, and you can buy a little bleeder tool that looks like a little key. You may even have one. And it's got a little square female receptacle on it, and there's a little square nut on every corner when you take the end caps off of the metal fin tube. And take a little bowl with you, like a little bowl from the kitchen or something, underneath the bleeder. And with it going and the pump running, so it's going 80 degrees, it's really firing, I want you to open each one of those. Start at the first floor, the lowest level where you have a metal fin tube radiator. Open that bleeder up, and it's going to start spitting air and water. It's going to spit and sputter until you get a solid stream out of there. Turn it off. Then go to the next one and the next one and the next one and the next one and go all the way around. And you may have to do one more round again, and you should solve the problem.
Two laps.
That's good. Two laps,
and you're
good.
It's not that big of a house, but I tell you, you can really hear that pinging at night.
You got air in the line, and that's what it's doing. And with the metal fin tube, because it's copper piping, you're getting that expansion and contraction, and that air, that cold air is what's cool air. It's not cold.
Essentially, Tom, your house is gassy.
It's
wow. You're correct.
These are really two good things. I like the two laps and the gassy. I'm using that.
I'm on it. Hold on a second, Tom, because we got to make you a big winner. Isn't it amazing when Manfredini gets a call like this? He goes, you got the female receptacle, you got nuts, you got all sorts of stuff. Sounds like a porn line.
Tom's going, huh? Wait.
What the heck are you doing?
Well, what was the thing? If you took the name of your first dog in the street you lived on, that would be your stripper name?
Yeah, Ginger Hanshaw.
That would be you?
Yeah, that's me. Ginger Hanshaw.
Oh, mine would be Kringle Pulaski.
Not so hot.
Polish girl.
Yeah, not so hot.
Or Kringle Crawford, depending on if you're north or south.
Kringle Crawford was a famous B-movie actress.
Right. Mine would have been Star Barberry.
All right, so we're going to do this. Let's go around the room. Vandeveld, what's your porn name?
Wait, is this the dog one?
Dog in the first road you lived on.
Oh, Flash Ardmore.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a good one. That sounds like a guy strip, like a stripper.
Flash Ardmore.
Yeah, Flash.
That's a Marvel character.
It's like a Chippendale.
Awesome, crazy dog.
Green Street in Villa Park, Ardmore.
Yeah.
Regal Jorgensen.
Okay, yeah.
Why does that make sense?
Sound like a judge.
Dr. Right. Regal?
And you can tell the way she said it, she's a depressed porn star, is hoping to get out of the business.
Now rise.
Depressed porn star with a question for Lou.
All right.
Mike?
I would be Candy Cottonwood.
That may be a winner.
That's a money maker right there.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, stand by. Coming to the main stage, the dance stylings of Candy Cottonwood.
Oh, yeah.
He named the dog that knowing that someday that would be a stripper name.
How did we get here, by the way?
Ginger Hanshaw sound Amish.
How did we get here?
Because you were,
talking
porn.
About radiators.
You were talking porn to the radiator guy. Mark Carmen, your stripper name?
They'll be at the Carm on Twitter.
What?
No, your dog's
This
name
isn't a self-promotion.
Street. Yeah, right.
I would walk around. I would have it across my chest, at the Carm, and I'd just walk out there.
I don't think you understand the concept.
No.
All right, let's go to whiny staff questions. Carmen, as a landlord, you're first. What's your whiny staff question?
All right, Steve.
Carm owns a building. Did you know that, Lou?
Lou, very large concern. I'm going to read you something my handyman sent me. You tell me if he's lying to me. The terrace solar lights were in a state of disrepair, so I gathered all pieces and units that he could find. He removed the batteries, stored them in the basement on the rear shelf. He wants to know if
do we really need all this detail?
I don't know.
Ask the man the question.
I didn't even know I had solar lights, Lou. That's the question. What do I do with these solar lights that I didn't know I had?
Where did you have the solar lights? Were they solar spotlights or were they accent lights? You have no idea.
Apparently, they were on the terrace that I didn't know I had.
All right. Well,
you're
the
building owner.
Yeah, with those solar lights, I mean, typically they're accent lights. They're not. They don't shed off a lot of light. There are some solar-powered spotlights, but even those are don't waste your money on that. Don't replace them.
No replacing.
No.
Great.
Should he get like regular bulbs?
Yeah, you should get regular fixtures if you need air. If you need to light, if you have a terrace that you need to light up, then that's probably something you have to address with a real fixture.
And check with your handyman. See if he's running some solar scam.
Right.
Or you could suggest to your tenants just to use the flashlights on their phones.
True.
Sounds safe. All right, Sandberg, what's your whiny question?
In the kids' bathroom, we have a tub and then a shower stall. And the shower stall head, I feel like, is one of those that's just a like a pole that comes out, and then it has a little head on it. And I want to, I don't like where it points.
Out of the wall, you mean?
It comes, yeah, out of the wall.
The shower arm coming from
above. Yeah. And okay. I want to change it to one where it's the, they can do the handheld thing.
Right.
I watched a few YouTube videos. Do you think that's something I can do, or should I have my guy do it? Well, not my husband, but our guy.
There are systems you can buy where from that shower arm that comes out of the ceiling, mm-hmm. you can place, there's a fitting that goes on there that will allow a regular shower head to go on and then the hose to come off the side.
And it's got nuts and a female wrench.
It does. And then there's a bar you can mount vertically that goes up and down to slide. So you can have two things. You can either have a regular shower head with a pull-out spray, a handheld, mm-hmm. or they make a unit that...
I want the one you're talking about, but do I have to cut metal to do that?
No. It's a complete kit that you'll buy. Moen makes one. Growy makes one. Kohler makes one.
Can you get them at Ace Hardware?
You can. It'd probably be a special order. It's this type of thing would be something you'd go to a plumbing supply house for.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that setup is probably the whole thing... could be a couple $100 for the mm-hmm. good one,
mm-hmm.
but it's easy to install.
Okay.
Why don't you just have a plumber come over and do that?
Well, because I'm very capable.
Plumber does it in an hour, so instead of 200, it's 300, and you have an hour to yourself.
I've got Lou Manfredini at my disposal.
Mm-hmm. You
during
just want to make Pat
incessantly. Now look at this. Yeah. Now look at this.
You just want to make Pat feel bad about the fact
that he's
not a man. According
to YouTube video, this went very smoothly, not going as smooth for
right,
me.
Right.
Just go to housemarchtv.com. You can watch all the videos right there.
Well done, Andrea.
Thank you, Lou.
Well done.
Andrea, question.
All right, Lou, my bathroom door, master bathroom, will not stay closed. I don't know why I close it.
Oh, that's a ghost.
Unless it doesn't latch.
It doesn't latch anymore, and it won't stay closed. So I close it. I go in the bathroom, dry my hair. The door is always bumping open.
Yeah, okay. It's poltergeist.
So here's the way to find out what's going on with the latch. You open up the door. You hold the door open so the latch, or you open up the door with the latch sticking out. You take a little lipstick and you paint it on the end of the latch. Then you open the door, hold the latch in, right? So you're holding the knob.
Okay.
Close the door where you want it to close. Release the knob, keeping the door closed.
Okay.
Then open the door, turn the knob, and open it. You're going to see an imprint on the lipstick
where it is
on the strike. And now it tells you whether you have to adjust the door up by tightening the screws on the springs up high or low by tightening the screws down low on the lower hinge.
Oh, perfect. That makes perfect sense. Thanks, Lou.
Ted, the way he makes this stuff up is really good.
He's the best.
Lou Manfredini's on the radio
tomorrow.
You can't
find that lipstick tip on Google, by the way.
That's right.
When I gave that, they're like, I Googled that. I didn't find them. Like, not everything's on Google.
This whole segment was like sex talk from Lou. It was really, really kind of dirty.
Star Barbary.
And we're fine with that.
All right, one last question from Dave Edit.
Lou, my buckthorn is exploding.
He's not even here.
I don't know. He called in from Florida, as far as I know. You're on Channel 9 now. You're on the radio in the morning. You're
yes,
on TV
sir.
This weekend.
Yes, sir.
God, take a break, man.
I know.
All right, see you.
Love you.
Love you back. American Weathermakers sponsoring Lou's First Call. We'll get a sense of what it's like to do security at the inauguration from an expert coming up on 720 WGN.
Lou, my buckthorn is exploding.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
The United States Secret Service is responsible for the coordination and planning of the security around the event. We know of 99 different organizations that intend to demonstrate in one form or another. We know of no specific credible threat directed toward the inauguration. There will be some 28,000 officials dedicated to the security of the event.
Steve Cochran Show continues. And Gary Byrne joins us. His book is Crisis of Character. Unprecedented threats driving the Secret Service inauguration security. Whether there is a credible threat on this day or not, it is a tremendous security undertaking. And by the way, and as Gary joins us now, Gary, I'm sure there are literally hundreds of threats. The definition of credible to me as a civilian and to you as a professional is probably quite different.
Yeah, there's exactly. First of all, good morning and thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you. There's different levels of threats. What you hear there is the Secret Service spokesperson telling you that they know, you know, they understand what the that there's people out there that want to disrupt, that they're anarchists, they're, you know, even terrorists, you know, some of them. And there's always that terrorist threat out there. But You know, we've been doing this a long time. I actually worked 3 inaugurals when I was in the Secret Service Uniform Division. There's 2 things about the inaugural that you need to understand, and they're both kind of the same thing. The bad thing is that it happens in the same place every 4 years. So if you're planning something evil, you have plenty of time and you know where it is. The good side of that is that the Secret Service and its partners have been doing this a long time, and they are very good at it. You know, from time to time, I have some criticisms of the Secret Service management style, but not the job they do. And I'm telling you, there'll be some issues. They'll get them out of the way, and the president will get sworn in, and everything will go well. I've seen it many times.
The rain today concerns me, because I would think one of the worst things for you guys would be umbrellas.
Yeah, they're not going to let the umbrellas in the secured area. On some of the other opportunities I've had to talk earlier in the week, I've told people, you know, if you're going, don't bring an umbrella, bring a poncho, bring a raincoat. They're not going to let them into the area. They could be used as weapons, and they just take too long for them to check them. You know, figure, you know, if 100,000 people have umbrellas, it's going to almost stop security.
Well, that's interesting, because I thought one of the major concerns would be the inability for your teams to be able to see, because the umbrellas covers up, you know, people's hands and all the things you look for.
No, that's a very good point. But a lot of that's covered, pardon the pun, from the air, from high rise buildings, the counter sniper guys. But you're right, the cover of an umbrella is also an issue. But the main thing is it just stops the checkpoint.
Okay, speaking of the checkpoints, Gary, how does this work as far as security? I mean, they have to be quick. The gates only open, I shouldn't say gates, but the area opens a few hours beforehand. They have to be quick but completely thorough. I mean, how right. do you not have a backup at security checkpoint?
So there are going to be some slowdowns, but here's the way it's going to work pretty much. The area from the Capitol down to the Washington Monument, basically in front of the White House, is secured off. About 3 blocks back on each side, and that's how people enter that secure area. Now, the checkpoints will be run pretty much like you see at the airport. And they will, like, everybody that needs to be in there besides the public, the press, equipment people bringing supplies, they're already in there. That equipment started being checked yesterday or late last night. So they try to get ahead of the curve by having all the large, bulky stuff in there. The individual people, they'll screen them as fast as they can. That's one of the reasons they want the umbrellas. And they've been advertising in that, in the D.C. area. If you're coming, bring as little as possible.
What is your biggest concern on a day like today? You said you've done 3 of these. You know, we always talk about the lone wolf nut as opposed to some sort of organized thing, because the organized thing from an intelligence standpoint seemingly would be easier to track. Is that still the case?
Yeah, it is. The lone wolf is always going to be an issue for the Secret Service, for law enforcement in general, because it's somebody who gets they're kind of self-motivated based on what they read off the internet or some other source. And anybody who's willing to trade their life for whatever they believe in or for protecting, that's the most dangerous person. But the Secret Service has a huge intelligence apparatus, and it has access to the entire U.S. intelligence apparatus, and it gets help from NATO neighbors and foreign countries. So they've got plenty of intelligence. The problem a lot of times is sifting through it and deciding what's credible and what's not. So
Gary Burns at home in Philly, his book is Crisis of Character. You can get it everywhere. He's done 3 of these, but he's also been a member of security teams and law enforcement for, you know, his entire life, basically. The other thing, Gary, is I remember Carter's inaugural parade. You were coming off a couple of assassination attempts of Gerald Ford. And, you know, it wasn't that long. We're talking about 1976 here. And this would have been January of 77. So it wasn't that long after the craziness of the 60s, where both Kennedys and Martin Luther King were killed. So there was an idea the president doesn't get out of the car. And then there on the parade route, Jimmy Carter and Rosalind Carter got out and started to walk. You can request that the president doesn't, but if he does, he does. Is that how it works?
Well, actually, the way it works now is the Secret Service just decided a while back that the protectee is going to get out somewhere. So what they did was they They have an area. It starts about in front of the Treasury, roughly, around, I guess it'd be 15th Street, and or 12th Street. And from that area towards the front of the White House, where the grandstand is, that's going to be the most secured area. That's where the president's detail is prepared to get out with him and protect him 100%. That's where a good concentration of your extra security, counter-sniper surveillance is. And it's the safest place for him to get out and walk to the grandstand. And presidents have been doing it for, you know, the last 20 years or so, maybe a little bit more. And it's not that they don't want them to get out. They just want them to get out in an area that is the most secure they can make it.
Gary, after 9/11, we came up with the terror alert levels, the orange and the red and the high alert. And I think the public really has a heightened sense of awareness. How does the public, when we're attending events like this, be it the inauguration or the big women's march here in New York and D.C. on Saturday, how does the public prepare for something like that? I know that is it a see if you see something, say something kind of a preparedness?
Absolutely. Actually, I'd go a little bit further. And I don't mean for this to sound silly, but first thing, you know, dress for the event you're coming to. If it's going to be raining, bring your raincoat or a poncho, not an umbrella. Follow the directions of law enforcement. Absolutely. If you're in an area, you know, and you're watching the event, whether it's a demonstration, and it starts to get ugly, back away from it. Get law enforcement's attention. Point toward the area so law enforcement can figure out where it's happening, and then back away and follow the direction.
Yeah, cooperate. I mean, in a word, right?
Absolutely.
Just cooperate.
Yeah, never engage. You know, never engage these protesters or these anarchists, because they're not there to talk or to negotiate. They're there to cause trouble, and in some cases, they're one step below terrorists, in my opinion.
Yeah, no. To what end? The protesters trying to interrupt things again? To what end? You're right to protest, stage your protest,
right.
But don't interrupt and don't make it harder for security folks. When do you exhale? Is it when the president disappears for the luncheon and has made it back?
I'm sorry, what was that question?
When do you guys get to exhale? Is when the parade is over and the president goes in for the luncheon?
Well, I'll be honest with you. After 12 years in the Secret Service Uniform Division, I think the exhale comes when you get to go home and walk in the front door of your house, you know.
Right.
And there's nobody involved in this. Secret Service, FBI, Metropolitan Police Department, Park Police. They're all going to be working 20-hour days. When they get back to their house and they can take their boots off, that's when they'll take a deep breath.
Thank you for your service, and we're a fan here, as you know, and it's always great to get your insight, so I hope we can do it again. Crisis of Character, the book, Gary J. Byrne, and enjoy the weekend. All right, yesterday, in the midst of these tedious confirmation hearings, there was a great exchange between Governor Rick Perry. Again, he's a very likable guy. I don't agree with a bunch of things he did as Texas governor, but it's really hard not to like him as a guy. So he made his opening statement, and Al Franken was questioning him. And, well, I'll pick it up from here. Roll it.
Governor, thank you so much for coming into my office. Did you enjoy meeting me?
I hope you were as much fun on that dais as you were on your couch.
Well.
May I rephrase that, sir?
Please. 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 Oh, my Lord. Oh, my Lord.
Well, I think we found our Saturday Night Live soundbite.
Just a very likable guy.
Oh, yeah. He was funny on Dancing with the Stars, too.
Yeah, he was.
We need more of those.
Doesn't mean he can run the energy department, no. But, you know, he's a cool guy to hang out with.
We need more of those moments.
Yeah, that and less grisly moments.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll come back with the news next at 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Now it's time for America to bind the wounds of division. Have to get together. To all Republicans and Democrats and independents across this nation, I say it is time for us to come together as one united people. We will double our growth and have the strongest economy anywhere in the world. At the same time, we will get along with all other nations willing to get along with us. We will be. And we're going to be doing a job that hopefully you will be so proud of your president. You'll be so proud. Again, it's my honor.
was an amazing evening. It's been an amazing two-year period. And I love this country. Thank you. Thank you very much.
There are an awful lot of people who have bought in from day one, and I hope he doesn't let them down the same way I hope I'm wrong about Donald J. Trump, who becomes the 45th president of the United States today at noon. Somebody that knows him much better than any of us do is Tim O'Brien, award-winning journalist, executive editor of the Bloomberg View, and author of Trump Nation, The Art of Being Donald. He's been on the show many times, and one of the things I respect about Tim is the fact that he's never wavered in his take and his statements on Trump, as many others who claim to know him and have written about him have. And Tim joins us now again. Good morning, sir. How are you?
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being back. I just read a piece, and I don't remember if it was Business Insider, but it was you and three other biographers being questioned about Trump and his ability to change.
That was in Politico.
It was Politico.
Magazine.
Yeah, it's a great piece, and I recommend it to others. But, Tim, you know this man. You've talked before about his ADD. You've talked before about your concerns of him now holding this job at noon today. What is your measure of confidence of him being able to change the bad behaviors and be presidential?
Well, I think the presidency depends on him evolving. I think our national dialogue depends on him evolving. I think we really need to look at this speech today. He's going to offer some of the policy of what his administration is going to be about. And on Monday, the reality and the prose come into play. And he's going to be making budget decisions, making administrative decisions, and he's going to be back. I think those are the three big things in front of him that will determine the kind of president he is and how he governs. And business person.
Oh, we lost him. All right. I don't know, we got a bad phone line or a funky facility, but we'll get him right back here in a second because he's too good a guest to lose.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to know about what he thinks about Trump's demeanor and his behavior. I mean, he's already said he's going to continue tweeting, but does he think he'll lessen the rhetoric a little bit? Maybe something miraculous will happen when he takes that oath today with the two Bibles.
Yeah, well, I think once you walk in the office and sit there, something happens too. Andre was just saying, Tim, in regards to the tweeting, I just wrote a blog about this. You know, one of the things that I think he should do, I don't think he should give up on Twitter, but I think he should use Twitter for good and not evil. I think he should use those 140 characters and have somebody looking over his shoulder because he can shape his message and he can say things that matter. But I just don't know that he has the discipline to ever get there.
Well, he's never demonstrated intellectual, emotional, or strategic discipline throughout his entire business career and his very short span here as a political candidate. I think his supporters love the fact that he's anti-institutional and unpredictable. The downside is that managing a federal bureaucracy and having the nuclear codes and overseeing the federal budget requires adult behavior. And he's not someone who's shown self-restraint or long-term thinking. And really the country depends on that now. He's going to have to evolve. And the question is, can a man who's almost 71 years old and has a long track record of erratic behavior behind him suddenly become a mature manager with a generous message?
That's my question to you too, Tim. How hands-on do you think he'll be? I mean, we see all the jokes and the sketches about Pence actually leading the country. How hands-on will Trump be?
Pence, Priebus, Ryan, that group, right. You know, actually running the show?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it will not be Rance Priebus and Paul Ryan. It's going to be Jared Kushner and Steve Bannon. And anyone who thinks that Rance Priebus, I think, is going to be the bridge between the Trump White House and the Congress, I could be held wrong from this a year from now, but I don't imagine that's where the gravity will reside in the Oval Office. I've sort of coined this term in reference to Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner, calling them Jovanka. As the first pair of people that Donald Trump will speak to each day and the last pair of people he will speak to each day. All of his other cabinet members, whether that's Rex Tillerson of Exxon, who's a demonstrated corporate manager with a lot of experience behind him, General Mattis is another very mature administrator. they may be able to come in and sit down with Donald Trump in the office and talk to him about military policy or foreign national security issues. But at the end of the day, he's going to check back in with Jared Kushner, Steve Bannon, and Ivanka Trump and ask them for guidance. And the reality is that that trio of people aren't themselves, and the capacities are untested.
That's the great concern, right? Because I think Ivanka has a leveling effect on him. Again, correct me if I'm wrong, because you would know. Jared Kushner is an unknown, but he's married to Ivanka. And Bannon is a frightening component of this, even though he's been very quiet since the election. But his views and his past certainly pop up. So that doesn't give me a whole lot of confidence, the threesome you just mentioned.
Well, I mean, Jared and Ivanka are kids. They're in their mid-30s. And neither Donald Trump, Ivanka Trump, or Jared Kushner have ever run a major bureaucracy. The Trump Organization is a boutique business. It's essentially a kind of mom-and-pop operation that is a global licensing business with some real estate here and there. And they're now taking over a federal bureaucracy. The executive branch alone of that bureaucracy has over 2 million people in it, and it's all over the globe. And it's an enormous management challenge outside of politics or ideology. There's just a management challenge that they're going to have to prove they're up to. And there's hundreds of unfilled positions still in the federal government. I don't think that's any fault of Donald Trump's. I think that happens with every transition. But they've got to buckle down. And you can't leave the national security apparatus unattended for a long period of time. That's something that's got many people concerned here in Washington. And then Trump, I think, himself has to demonstrate greater sophistication in messaging. He said very erratic things about the federal budget. He said contradictory things about what he wants to do with Obamacare and his own views about what a replacement for Obamacare should look like. And these are things that are going to affect millions of people. And the main thing he needs to deliver on is job. You know, he campaigned in coal country telling coal miners he was going to bring coal jobs back. He campaigned in the upper Midwest, you know, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, telling post-industrial workers there that he was going to bring their jobs back. And a lot of those workers were people who voted for Obama in the past and were turned off by Hillary Clinton and believed Trump when he told them he was going to deliver jobs to them. And that's going to be the other thing he's going to have to do. And the only real way he can do that, I think, ultimately, is if he gets his big infrastructure spending plan put through and he can temporarily employ a lot of those people on public works projects. But that's going to be a fight in Congress. And if he doesn't get that through, how is he going to deliver jobs to people? He's got an immense task in front of him.
One of the great concerns about Trump, and I'll let you go on this, and always appreciate your time. Again, the guest is Tim O'Brien. You can read him everywhere. But check out that political piece I mentioned and just Google Tim O'Brien and get his books because he's terrific. But here's the deal. When you have to decide as commander-in-chief to put American lives on the line, knowing that some of them will not come home, and their kids younger than his own kids and younger than Tiffany, and some of them not that much older than his 10-year-old Barron. So when he gets to that point and he has to make that call, he'll have Mattis, he'll have Allen, he'll have other people who are there with him, but it's his decision to go. Does he have the emotional maturity, in your opinion, to do that?
I would say right now I'm not optimistic. I never want to say absolutely no because people can always surprise us, and Trump has surprised many people, but I don't have a high level of confidence that he's going to inhabit the Oval Office with the gravitas that it requires.
Tim O'Brien, executive editor, Bloomberg View, Trump Nation, The Art of Being Donald, and always appreciate your time. Where will you be today when the inauguration happens?
I'm standing right now on the rooftop of CNN headquarters looking at the Capitol building and down onto the dais where Trump is going to speak from. And I will be in and around this area all day.
Until the Trump people remove you.
Oh, my darling,
not three times on the ceiling if you want me.
Tony Orlando apparently playing one of the Trump functions this weekend.
hallway.
Is it tonight? Whoa, I'm being told by the voices in my head it's tonight. 727, a Trump family moves into the White House today, which is swanky. Pretty cool digs. But I don't know, it's tough to work in the same building or live in the same building that you work in. You know what I mean? Got to feel like you never leave work.
I think the house is a little kind of spacious.
Well, I've been in. Yeah, I've been in. I've been in the private quarters, but I've had the A-tour. And I'm just saying maybe you need a little break. You don't need a break like I have, you know, where you live in a double-wide in East St. Louis and you drive to work. But it's got to be tough, you know. That's why you need to get away from there once in a while. But as nice as a house as it is, let's get away from the inauguration talk for a second to tell you about a mega mansion you can pick up in Los Angeles. Just went on sale. It's in Bel Air. Let me see if, and Carms, jump in on this because you're a bit of a real estate nut. You like looking at stuff. You like considering buying stuff.
I'm big,
sure,
Steve.
I'm sure you watch all the real estate shows on TV, the flipping shows and the who are the annoying rich guys that do the real estate in Los Angeles, whatever that thing is.
I love the New York guys, too. I like to see a nice penthouse there. I'm always considering a good $5 million spot, just you know, a little corner apartment. Go ahead.
Well, the Bel Air house is four levels, 38,000 square feet, 12 bedrooms, 21 bathrooms. 21 bathrooms? Somebody got some bad food. 21 bathrooms?
It's aggressive.
Who wants to clean all those bathrooms?
Three kitchens. A bowling alley. Somehow a bowling alley doesn't seem to fit in the decor here. A movie theater. A candy room.
That's a good idea.
Oh, yeah. That's the best.
An infinity pool complete with a swim-up bar. It also includes a decommissioned helicopter from the 80s television show Airwolf parked on the roof.
Oh, I used to love that show. Remember that show?
I don't think that's
Airwolf?
And a gigantic car collection comes with a house as well. The home is at 924 Bel Air Road. It's completely furnished, has more than 100 art installations spaced throughout the estate. And the luxury property is on sale now. Within $10 million, how much are you willing to pay? By the way, it also includes a 270-degree view that extends from Malibu to the San Gabriel Mountains. Within $10 million, how much are you willing to pay? Carms?
$42
million. All right. Andre?
I'm guessing it's about $100 million.
All right. Keep in mind, this is the most expensive home, private home ever for sale in America. Mary?
Didn't know that part. Want to raise my guess?
Oh, you want to raise it to what?
Oh.
$226 million.
All right.
Mary? I'm going to raise my guess, too.
Two?
$280.
$280? Okay. Mary?
Can I just go a billion?
You can. It's not sensible, but you can.
All right, $500 million.
All right, you are a little juiced there. $250 million.
Wow.
For one house.
Oh my God!
Imagine the PMI.
How many? You're right. How many bathrooms?
21.
Oh my God!
21.
Imagine the real estate taxes.
The taxes, yeah.
Yeah, right.
The taxes are $1 billion. Actually, yeah.
How about the water bill for the bathrooms?
You're really stuck on this whole bathroom thing, aren't you?
I bet you know what? I clean bathrooms all the time.
I bet it has a staff, though. Don't you think that would have to come with, like...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you better have a staff.
Yeah.
And you better keep it furnished. Imagine going, oh, we got to get to IKEA. We got 38,000 square feet. Why don't you just make it an IKEA? Let's go to Mary's conscience on this. Mary's conscience on cleaning the bathrooms of a 21-bathroom estate. Is that going to be a problem for you, Mary's conscience?
I mean, you're going to need... 10 5-gallon drums at Comet alone.
Yeah. And the Pine Sol. Can you imagine?
I mean, you're just going to have Mr. Clean live in one of the rooms.
Might as well, because I don't want to.
Will your husband help you clean, conscience?
Eyes are rolling.
It's 7:30. We'll come back with a big story next. Hip, we'll break down the conference championships before 8 o'clock. We continue on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
There's a video that's made the rounds where Antonio Brown had a Facebook Live video, and along the way caught some comments from Mike Tomlin where he refers to your team affectionately as, say, for radio purposes, jerks. Any thoughts on the video or on the comments?
Yeah. Well, as you know, I'm not on Snapface and all that, so I don't really get those. But I'm really just worried about getting our team ready to go. I'm not really too worried about what they put on instant chat or whatever it is.
That's all we're doing. I'm not on Snapface or Facebook. I'm not on Facebook. I'm not on. Not on my hips, my lips, whatever the hell that thing's called.
Instamatic.
Instamatic. I'm not an Instamatic. Hey, you remember the old Polaroid cameras? Weren't they great? I'm just trying to get ready for the weekend. 7:42. Dan Hampton joins us, the Hall of Famer. And you know what? This Antonio Brown thing last week, Hamp. Well, the coach told him not to do it, and then he went ahead and did it anyway. Compared to what you guys did in the 80s, it just was kind of cute.
Well, good morning. And, you know, the team that I played on didn't have a lot of faces you'd want to put on Facebook.
Right.
But first and foremost, yeah, I got to tell you, Mike Tomlin, and I've quoted him in the past. I really like him. As a human being, as a coach. And I think he did a pretty good job of cleaning up this mess. But, there's certain rules of a football team. And the first one is it's a team. And the individualism of all this nonsense of face chat and all this, like Belichick said, hey, he's not – well – at some point, there has to be, compliance. And it was, hey, no question about it. If that would have been possible back in my time, and you think Ditka would have eviscerated him? It would have been crazy. I'll never forget one time Willie Gault kind of said something smart aleck to Ditka, and Ditka was up in the front of the room. And Willie said something along the lines of, you say we can't do that. Well, you just did it. Kind of questioned him. Dick just started pushing his way through the crowd going, hey, I'm a man. You're a man. You want to go outside? So,
hey, of course he did.
Dick, he would have been pummeled. And come on, what is it? What's the intent? Is this a vehicle to gain, what do you call them, members or people?
Followers.
Followers, yeah, there you go, which is a word I detest. But, it's about the team. And this was a violation. And, I'll tell you this, in a big picture way, this may really kind of work out, because a lot of times when there's a player that pulls some kind of a stunt like this, and then the coach has got to, and again, what that coach said about the New England Patriots is exactly what the other 31 or the other 30 coaches are saying about New England, calling them that name. Now, I'm a big fan of Belichick and New England because they do things the right way. They win. But that's what everybody's attitude is. Hey, those guys, they're privileged. They're, they're things go their way. They're kind of like the spoil kid on the block. So everybody is envious. And, well, guess what? Now that Mike Tomlin has, been exposed for, saying something derogatory, I think the team's going to rally and say, hey, you know what? If we go out and play poorly and lose, then
nope, we lost him. I tell you, we're having a lot of phone problems today. The weather? I don't know what it is. Or is this the first sign Trump's starting to shut down the show?
Oh, no.
It's possible.
First CNN, now Cochran.
No, it is not Trump. It's just a technical issue. So we'll get Ham back.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Well, as you know, I'm not on Snapface and all that, so I don't really get those, what they put on Instant Chat or whatever it is.
I'm more of a U.S. mail guy. I like write a letter and somebody put a stamp on it.
I think he drives like an 82 Chevy.
I drive an 82 Chevy. I use a phone, but it's at my house. It actually has a cord on it.
Probably rolls up his windows.
I roll up my windows in my 82 Chevy on the way home to call Hamp. Dan Hampton, Hall of Famer, ChevyDriveChicago.com. Let's break these two games down, starting with the early one, which I think is the better of the two games. And that is the Packers and the Falcons with the two best quarterbacks in the game now. I'm not taking anything away from Tom Brady, but there's, in my opinion, the Falcons and the Packers have the two hottest quarterbacks in the game.
And it's reflective of the over-under. A lot of folks probably are thinking, I've never seen an over and under total on an NFL game this high, and it's the highest in NFL playoff history.
Is that right?
It's 61. So it's indicative of what you just said. Hey, these are two amazingly effective quarterbacks. I think in the underbelly of
Trump.
It's got to be Trump, right? Trump shutting us down.
It actually goes BuzzFeed, CNN, Cochran.
We ought to try to get a hold of Pat Brady in Washington to see if he's already been jailed.
Honestly, the way he just disappeared there is creepy. I don't know if I've ever heard it like that because we had that little static there. That was different. Something's going on. It's not your normal bad cell.
It's very stealthy. You know, very stealthy. Is he with us? We got him? What's the story? All right.
What would John Fox say about this?
And that's a landline, by the way.
That's
a landline. So we're calling him. I'm going to call him now on his cell phone.
Okay. Well, I'll just, you know, we won three games. I wish we'd won four. We won three. We got trouble all over. All three, four.
Can you believe they gave me $18 million for 4 years?
Every unit.
This is highly entertaining. Highly.
All right. The phone's not set. Set the phone for me.
Well, as you know, I'm not on Snapface and all that, so I don't really get those.
All right, back to Dan Hampton.
Crazy.
We've never done a three-part Hamp before. This is part three of the Hamp Fest.
All I can say is I think little Dan's hacking the Russians.
I miss little Dan.
Little Dan, he's about 6'8 now. All right, so before we lose you again, Packers, Falcons, high over under, lots of points on the board. Do you agree?
Nah, absolutely. And, you know, the thing about the Atlanta offense that everyone talks about is Matt Ryan and Julio and you know, the fact that they're the highest scoring offense in football, they don't realize that they've got a terrific running game. And these running backs, Tevin Coleman and other, they run hard. And it's really a pretty scary offense. The Green Bay Packers, they've got some limitations on defense in the secondary. We all know that. But the one wild card in this game is you know, Aaron Rodgers, when he said, we'll run the table, he's run the table.
Yep.
And it's eight in a row. And whether you like the Packers or not, you've got to respect the fact that, you know, here he is. He's kind of like on a mission. And the one part about this game that I think everybody's maybe overrating is that everybody keeps saying, well, Atlanta's defense is better. It's better. Well, it's still 25th in the league, 27th in points allowed. For whatever reason, I just think the Packers, they're on a mission. And I know they've got injuries, and you know, LaVonte Adams, he's got a foot issue, and he missed practice. And I just think this is a team that and you know, for years and years, Steve, I told you, when the Bears played Green Bay, we were beat before the kickoff because their coaches are very good. They're very smart.
Right.
They know how to devise a game plan to exploit weaknesses. And every team's got weakness. And they're very, very keen on identifying it. And I just think the Packers will be hard to match points with because I think they can score every time they get the ball.
I agree with that. And I hope I'm wrong about how close the game is. But I got Packers 35-24. How about you, Carm?
I think Atlanta's winning. I'm going to go 27-24 Falcons.
How about 45-42 Green Bay?
Wow, that's a game I want to see. Yeah, that would be a good time.
It's going to be fireworks. Yeah,
that'd be a good time. Now, on the other side of the coin, you got Pittsburgh, New England. This could be a grind it out. It's not like Tom Brady has everybody in the building to throw it to. He spends a lot of time on Snapface, by the way. But the Steelers. I mean, they're rolling, man. That train is rolling. Are they going to beat the Patriots?
And you know, they have the personnel to do it. And again, I know I was you know, being interrupted so rudely by the Russians when I was trying to explain. When Mike Tomlin, you know, called the Patriots that word, and now he's got to basically, you know, in the light of day, atone for it. When, you know, when you in the locker room, that's sacred. You don't bring it out. Well, that was, like I said, a violent. Well, I think the team will kind of rally and say, hey, we got your back. And I just think Pittsburgh is getting better and better. And if you look at some of the parts of this football team, their defense has got better. Their linebackers are playing exceptional. They're rushing the passer better and better and better the last 4, 5, 6 weeks of the season. That's how you stop Tom Brady. It's not coverage. It's pass rush. And the one wild card is, here they are in the AFC Championship game, and Ben Roethlisberger, as good as he is, he's won 2 Super Bowls, hasn't played well. If he plays the best game of the last 2 months, they can beat New England pretty easily. But will he? You know, we know about Le'Veon Bell, how he's done some pretty amazing stuff, not only this season, but especially in the playoffs. That this is an offense that will you know, slap you. And they're good enough to where they can match up. And, you know, as much as we all respect Tom Brady, Julian Edelman, you know, really, is he going to beat you? So we'll see. Like I said, the Steelers, they've got the firepower. Now will they play like champions?
I think because it's Belichick, the insane greatest coach in NFL history, he keeps the number down and the Patriots win a tight one, 17-16. Carm?
Pats 31, Steelers 24.
No way they get 31 points on the Steelers.
I'm going with 9-2 in his career, 26 touchdowns, 3 interceptions against the Steelers.
Well, that's a lot of points.
Yep. It is.
Yeah. How about 21-20, Pittsburgh wins? You know, Pittsburgh beat Kansas City, didn't score a touchdown. That can't happen again. They've got to be better in the red zone. They've got to be able to, you know, to force it in there and come away with a touchdown. I think they can 3 times. 21-20, they win.
Pittsburgh Green Bay, man, that's an old school Super Bowl right there, huh?
Well, and I will have tape of this next week, but if both of the underdogs win, I predicted in August on Pro Football Weekly it would be Pittsburgh and Green Bay in the Super Bowl. So I've got a ulterior motive for picking both of these road dogs.
Sure,
championship weekend.
All right, Nostradamus, have a great weekend watching them, and we will get that tape and throw it in your face next week. The Hall of Famer, the great Dan Hampton, back with the news next at 720 WGN. Thank you, ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood.
Sing along.
You know I love you more than one night.
What?
Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me, girl.
America's only hope for the future. Dean Richards joins us now live from Channel 9.
I, Dean Richards, do solemnly swear to bring you all the entertainment news to the best of my ability.
Hey, you know what you're doing Sunday? Sunday, you're sitting down. Are you doing the show Sunday?
I am not doing the show Sunday.
Oh, you need time to prepare. Sunday, you're going to be sitting down with John Cleese, the next president of the United States. What?
That's right.
No, with John Cleese, the legend of Monty Python.
Monty Python, Fawlty Towers, go down the list.
I believe it's Python.
Monty Python?
I believe it's Python. I believe the correct pronunciation is Python. Monty Python.
And do you have to do like a fake woman's voice when you say
that? Oh, it's Monty Python.
Monty Python. I don't like spam.
Oh, people will be happy to know that you've asked me to bring back my incredible impression of the Queen. Oh, it's Monty Python.
I'm hoping somebody's alarm clock just went off, and that's the very first thing they heard.
Actually, their Amazon Echo or Alexa just ordered royal jewels.
They said, why is Mrs. Doubtfire waking me
up? Oh, I'm not Mrs. Doubtfire. I'm the queen, keeper of the corgis.
You're out on this ledge by yourself.
Feels like a Friday.
Mm-hmm. Special Friday. It's a special Friday.
It is a special Friday. It's an important day. It's the inauguration day. What sort of entertainment will we see today?
As part of the actual ceremony itself, this 15-year-old Jackie Evancho.
I think she's 16 now.
Is she 16?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Will be singing the national anthem following the swearing-in of Mike Pence.
And I like this kid, by the way.
Donald Trump.
Yeah, I've seen her in a couple of interviews. She's very mature. She has a sister who is transgender, who is in the middle of that procedure. Well, that's more than a procedure, that entire, you know, journey.
Process, yeah.
And she's very close to her, and she has been just brutalized on the internet because the internet is filled with cowards. And this kid is not political. Guess what? She's 16, and she considers it an honor to be able to sing the anthem today. That's the way it ought to be treated. Leave this kid alone, you cowards. Let me go to the queen on this.
And the queen,
Steve is correct. Leave the child alone.
Let them eat cake.
But not too much cake. It's bad for the hips.
The queen would never bother herself with one's hips.
Oh, I had the Portillo's chocolate cake. It went straight to my booty.
Do you know it's made with mayonnaise?
What?
You guys should take your accent show on the road.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that'd be a big ticket seller.
Like they had those guys at the Lincoln Memorial performance last night, the piano guys.
Yeah.
We'd be the foreign language guys.
Did you watch this, the concert from last night?
People from the front row going, Steve, do your Frenchie. Do the Frenchie.
Did you watch the concert last night?
I watched a little bit of it.
Did you see the part where Lincoln cried?
What? I did not see that.
I'm kidding. It's a joke.
Did not see that part.
Everything I say today that's even remotely offensive, I'm just going to go, it's a joke.
I saw Lee Greenwood singing God Bless the USA.
Yeah. Always a good moment.
I did not see Three Doors Down.
Did you see any of the Doors?
I didn't see one, two, or four of the Doors. I didn't see any of them.
Okay. All right.
I didn't see Toby Keith.
Toby Keith was great.
I was very busy working on some movie reviews.
We're going to get to those movies in just a second.
So you say.
First.
When will the movie reviews
The movie reviews are upcoming, but first let's go live to Slovenia.
Oh, you know, because we know that, you know, the big parade's going to be today in D.C.
Uh-huh.
All the festivities, all the balls tonight will be taking place. But what's happening in Melania Trump's hometown, in her home country of Slovenia, which is, you know, it's like big doings going on there.
I believe the hometown, she's from Where the Hell Are We, right? Isn't that the name of the town?
She's from Svednica.
Svednica.
I think is how you say it.
Bless you.
S-E-V-N-I-C-A, Svednica, Slovenia.
Mm. And what are they doing there? Are they having Melania Day?
Well, yeah, I guess sort of. They're marking the inauguration and welcoming guests to see where Melania grew up.
Uh-huh.
They are putting on a display of locally produced goods, and they are doing a festival of grapevine pruning. This,
what do you mean? So the big day is everybody gets to prune a grapevine?
Well, doesn't that just mean drinking wine?
I don't think, no, this sounds...
I think you actually have to go prune a grape.
It sounds like this is not just pruning a grape. This is a festival of grapevine pruning, according to the Washington
Post.
So is
it a great honor to prune grapevines?
It would be to me. Hmm. If, you know, where I came, you know, I'm from...
Sounds like a load of crap.
The south side of where I grew up, if, you know, if they had a festival of avoiding rats in the alley, I would consider that quite a... consider that quite the honor.
One more before we break, come back with the movies. The Endowment for the Arts, is the National Endowment for the Arts, the NEA?
The National Endowment for the Arts, and there
There's a rumor that it's going to be cut.
That President, soon-to-be President Trump, plans on eliminating the National Endowment for the Arts and privatizing it. And this is not the first time that this has happened.
What, even brought to you by GEICO?
Maybe. Very, very possibly. That's what it would be about. There have been several attempts to privatize the National Endowment for the Arts in the past. The closest they ever got is when President Reagan tried to do it, and his pal, Charlton Heston, stepped in and talked President Reagan into not doing it. Newt Gingrich tried to push something through at one time.
He's charming.
So if it happens, it
like
means
a roid.
Public broadcasting, lots of different arts projects would be without funding, would have to all go commercial.
It would affect, I would think, wouldn't it also affect PBS and NPR funding?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, all the public broadcasting for radio and television as well as a number of other projects for arts groups around the country that do plays and concerts and promote the arts. And, you know, everybody can feel however they want to feel about it, but, I mean, to me, promoting the arts is promoting civility. Is, you know, promoting dialogue is promoting conversation.
Look, every government agency can be trimmed and have money saved, but the idea you just wipe out an agency, I mean, that's not good.
Yeah. Yeah. And to privatize it, you know, means that, you know, you can have the arts as long as X corporation agrees with whatever it is that the arts organization is trying to put forward. And that's...
I would be willing to help by selling my dogs playing pool collection. I have the dogs playing. Well, I have dogs playing pool. I have dogs playing tennis.
No.
I have dogs playing Yahtzee. No. My favorite is
on velvet. Are these all on velvet?
They are. My favorite is dogs playing Jenga.
I didn't know they could play Jenga with paws.
Oh, yeah, they just knock it down. Hmm. Yeah, somebody else has to set
dogs
it up.
Are very dogs resourceful. Knock it down. Dogs yeah. Very, very resourceful.
We'll come back. Dean will review The Founder, Split, and Triple X.
Good movies this weekend.
I have a feeling the Triple X review won't take long.
You'll be calling his name. Dean Richard, the entertainment.
Mark Carman's here, Dean. Are you a movie guy, Carms? When you take out a lovely lady, do you go on movie dates?
I do love to hold a hand in a theater, Steve.
What's a big romantic night for Mark Carman?
Big romantic night. Let me
think. Like a ball game and beer?
Pretty much, yeah.
Ball game, drinks afterwards?
Will you go to the Bulls game with
like
me?
Like a Bulls game, and then you go out for drinks, try to get her liquored up? Is that the big romantic night for you?
I've been bringing women to Northwestern games this year. They seem to love it.
Students? You're a little old for that, aren't you?
That's true. No, they're not students, Steve. I'm a professional.
Are these comp tickets you're getting?
Sure. No, actually, they're not, Dean. Nothing
more romantic than a gift you don't have to pay for.
Go Jets.
Agreed.
And you ask them out that way, too. Go, hey, I got free tickets for this. You want
to
go?
Would you like to go to the Northwestern Lewis University basketball game?
Go
I'd absolutely love to.
Get to sit in the press box.
It's amazing. Yeah. You can meet Dave Ennett.
Right.
Joey Meyer.
Right.
Free nachos.
Paul Kennedy.
Dave Kaplan.
Haven't seen Kip.
All right, here's some movie reviews. The Founder is the new movie about the start of McDonald's. Of course, the original McDonald's here. Is that incorrect?
That's the myth. What I always thought.
Yeah, Des Plaines, right?
That's what I always thought, that the first McDonald's ever was in Des Plaines, Illinois on Lee Street.
What?
That is an untrue statement. That's the first McDonald's that Ray Kroc franchised from these two guys, the two actual McDonald brothers who had their original location. The original location was in San Bernardino, California.
What?
They franchised a couple of restaurants out, not very successfully, but... This guy, Ray Kroc, comes along. He was a milkshake machine salesman. You know, those little machines you put the cup underneath the spinny thing and mixes up the milkshakes. He sold those things and went to this McDonald's in San Bernardino, California, and is completely blown away by the operation. The simplicity of the operation, the efficiency of the operation. And he says, you know, hey, this is a gold mine. This needs to be franchised. And then he opens his store in Des Plaines, Illinois. He was from Arlington Heights originally.
So this is after the McDonald's brothers wouldn't sell him the whole deal and he stole the idea.
Well, he wasn't trying to buy the whole deal in the beginning. He just wanted he saw greater franchise potential for McDonald's than the two brothers did. They were actually pretty satisfied being small and high quality and, you know, very small and efficient. They didn't really want to expand. They kind of fought Ray Kroc every step of the way for expansion and all the things that he wanted to do. But eventually did do it, copied their style to great success, amazing success, you know, franchising all over the country. But eventually squeezing out the two original McDonald brothers.
And they still have the name on every McDonald's, as some of you may know. You may have heard of McDonald's. And the family still has to drive by them knowing they got none of the big money.
They got, the two brothers got just over $1 million apiece for basically selling the name to Ray Kroc. Their store in San Bernardino eventually goes out of business. This is a fascinating story, this movie, The Founder, for a couple of reasons. It's a really interesting, really completely rags-to-riches story. This guy, Ray Kroc, was just a fast talker, a big talker.
Not, he was on the verge of going under, right?
Not a very successful guy at all. Absolutely on the verge of going under till he stumbled on these two McDonald guys who naively shared all of their secrets with him.
He died in 19, and it's Ray Kroc now, he died of heart failure in 1984. When he died, there were 7,500 McDonald's in 31 countries worth $8 billion. Yeah. His personal fortune was about $500 million in 1984 dollars, which is easily $1 billion now.
Part of the I don't want to give too much away from the movie, and these are not things that will spoil the movie, but part of the deal for the two original McDonald brothers was about $1 million apiece, which they put in the contract, and they also wanted 2% of the sales of this new McDonald's in perpetuity. Ray Kroc goes, well, we're not going to put that in the agreement because it's going to mess up financing on my part, but don't worry about it. Here's handshake and we'll do it.
Ugh.
Never happened. These guys, out of all that money that you just talked about, that $9 billion, whatever it is, because it was never put into writing, they did not get that money. So,
wow.
Fascinating story, amazing performance by Michael Keaton. And is there anything more, completely American than the McDonald's success story?
Plus, it sounds like, though, it's going to make me angry, and I probably won't enjoy the double cheeseburger next time I order it.
I'll bet you will.
Oh,
I'm guessing that you will. Really, the only downside for me was seeing that a McDonald's hamburger once cost 15 cents. That was shocking to me.
Don't you remember, though, when you used to get a hamburger, a fries, and a Coke? As kids, we would do that for less than a dollar.
Well, the first experience I ever had with a radio station, I was 10 years old, and I won a McDonald's hamburger. And I had to go to the local radio station to pick up the card for it. And my brother and my cousin and I hitchhiked.
Wow.
Hitchhiking, kids. That was something that happened in the 70s. I was 10 years old. My brother was 12. This is my special needs brother now.
Little kids would get into a car with total strangers.
Exactly.
Happened
exactly.
In the 80s, 12, too, guys.
And my cousin was probably 13, maybe. And, yeah, we were hitchhiking.
Yeah, what could go wrong with that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For a 15-cent coupon.
Yeah, we got this 15, 20-cent coupon, whatever it was. Yeah.
Now, I love the movie. I gave it a B+, although, you know me, I would have liked a little more attention paid to Ronald McDonald.
Yeah, well, because you're a clown, man.
A little more clown emphasis.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have killed him.
Yeah.
Would it kill him to include a Mayor McCheese somewhere in the bunch, somewhere in the story?
The greatest.
Small cameo from the McBurglar?
The greatest moment for Dean would have been if Ronald McDonald came in his giant shoes and served him a cheeseburger while he's watching the Ray Kroc movie. Am I right or am I right? Come on.
I'm not going to argue.
Triple X, The Return of Xander Cage. Man, I couldn't care less. How's this one?
Who doesn't enjoy a nice Vin Diesel movie?
Me.
With a super thin plot line. The story of him being an extreme government operative, presumed dead. He's brought back into the mix. Steve, now wait a minute. You prejudge this
but
movie.
But I'm surprised he had time to do this with his Shakespeare in the Park schedule.
This is the story, Steve, of trying to recover a device if, in the wrong hands, could bring down every frickin' satellite that's up in the sky. That's the importance of why Xander Cage had to return along with his band of misfits, renegade misfits, to recover this device and save the world.
I'm sorry, I was distracted because you said Vin Diesel.
Because somebody was jingling their keys. I totally understand.
Melania Trump just walked out with her dad. Oh, no, wait, that's the president. That's President Trump.
Does she look beautiful or what?
She looks fantastic. And
wow.
Her dad looks older.
Yeah.
You want to know what she's wearing?
Yeah, let's go live to Andre in D.C. now for our review of the outfit.
Dean's list B on the Vin Diesel movie.
Dean, we want to get your review on
I thought
this.
It was fun, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Melania wearing from the Ralph Lauren collection, or if you say Ralph Lauren collection, the sky blue double face cashmere crop cutaway jacket.
Yeah, me too.
The cashmere mock turtleneck dress, the RL suede gloves, yep. And the suede clutch.
That's what I have on today.
Mock turtleneck
outfit. I just got mine in big and tall.
Yeah. Sky blue double face cashmere mock turtleneck
got
dress.
Mine
yesterday.
At Target, much cheaper.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With the matching sky blue suede pumps as well.
She looks fabulous. I gotta say, she wore it better than I did.
Stunning.
Who wore it best? I gotta go with Melania.
And she has an updo just like yours, Steve.
Yeah, yeah. Did you know I got an updo for the wedding I was at last weekend in Florida, Dean?
I noticed that. Yeah. I saw the pictures. You're very stunning.
And finally, Split.
I'm going to say shave the neck next time you do that.
Yeah, that's probably a good point. Let me write that down. M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong's new movie.
It's called Split, a story of a guy who has multiple personality disorder.
Yeah, me too.
24 personalities in this guy. You see 9 of them manifest themselves on the screen as he kidnaps 3 teenage girls, locks them in the basement. Who knows what he's going to do? That's revealed as the different personalities are revealed. Meanwhile, he's working with a therapist played by the legendary Betty Buckley, trying to figure out, try to unravel this very severely psychologically damaged person. James McAvoy makes this movie. The storyline is fairly predictable. Nothing special. Super stereotypical of scary movies, but James McAvoy playing these 9 different characters, subtly and startlingly slamming into these characters, is just a masterclass in acting. Wound up giving this one Dean's List B+. Also, love this movie as well.
I finally saw Jackie, by the way, and she is phenomenal in Jackie.
Isn't that performance great?
Natalie Portman, we're talking about. Just tremendous, tremendous.
Wish the movie was as good as her performance.
Yeah.
I thought the movie was a little weak, but still enjoyed that performance. And this Vin Diesel.
I'm sorry. I'm watching Melania and her dad again.
Now I know how to get Steve to not pay attention to what I'm talking
about. If you say Vin Diesel, it's like hypnotizing me. I just immediately go out.
It's like quotation marks. Vin Diesel.
enjoy the weekend. Don't forget, Dean. I don't know if are there any tickets left for the John Cleese thing?
I'm going to have to check Ticketmaster on that. I haven't been keeping track.
All right, but take a look. And also, we know with sadness, the passing of Miguel Ferrer, one of the great TV character actors, who did a few movie shots as well. 61 years old, been fighting cancer. And one of those that guy faces where you see him and you go, oh, it's that guy. But far, far too young. And sad story there.
Very true.
Enjoy your weekend.
Enjoy the inaugural today. I know you will.
Yes. Yes. It's a very big day for me. All right, 8:35. We got to hurry through this and come back and get to the big story before we get to Avik Roy, one of the best experts in the country on what's going to happen to your Obamacare. Coming up on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Our president-elect took his case to the American people to repeal and replace Obamacare, and the American people voted decisively for a better future for health care in this country.
The Republicans say repeal and replace. The only thing that has going for it is alliteration. They have no replacement plan.
We have a plan to replace it. We have plenty of ideas to replace it. And you'll see as the weeks and months unfold what we're talking about replacing it.
Now Republicans in Congress are, again, like the dog who caught the bus. They can't keep all the things that Americans like about the ACA and get rid of the rest without throwing the entire healthcare system into chaos.
The Republicans are their own worst enemies. The Democrats can't figure out what to do either. Oh, what a shock. Congress isn't helping. Avik Roy is one of the preeminent experts in the country on health care, and he and I go back many years talking about Obamacare from the beginning of the ceremonial repeal votes that the Republicans in the House took over and over again to where we are today. So where are we today? Let's bring Avik Roy in now. And how are you, sir? Nice to talk to you again.
Hey, I'm doing fine. How are you? Happy Inauguration Day.
Thank you very much. It's been too long. let's go through your many credits here. Where can people read you most readily?
Well, I'd say the most important place to look is our new think tank, the Foundation for Research on Equal Opportunity. Our website is freeop.org, freopp.org.
Excellent. Freeop.org, and I'm sure you'll link to whatever else you're doing as well there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, so where are we with repeal and replace? And second question, if I can throw a follow-up in, because you know it's that kind of day. Is it even possible to do a replace in a timely fashion?
Well, in a timely fashion, I think it's going to be really hard, because to repeal Obamacare, to truly repeal it, for every word of it, you need 60 votes in the Senate to overcome a filibuster. You can only repeal parts of it using the reconciliation process, which only needs 50 votes in the Senate. So if they do what they're saying they're going to do, which is a party line, partisan, you know, reconciliation process where they don't need any Democratic help, they can only defund Obamacare, but the regulations of Obamacare will largely stay in place. To replace those, they're going to need 60 votes. They're going to have to work on something bipartisan. That's going to take time. You have to negotiate with Democrats.
And the bill itself was a problem from the get-go. They could have fixed Medicaid a long time ago, but the bill itself was a problem. But pieces of the bill are absolute keepers. Once we get beyond the politics of this, wouldn't whatever comes out new look a lot like what was already in place, but maybe thinner?
That's one possibility. There are other possibilities. So the health reform plan that we've published at my new think tank, which is called Transcending Obamacare, and you and I have talked about it before, in Transcending Obamacare, we not only replace Obamacare, but we reform Medicare and Medicaid so that the entire entitlement system is in a fiscally sustainable path and we don't bankrupt the country. That looks pretty different from just, you know, a skinnier version of Obamacare. So, I think the path forward for Republicans is not to concede the argument that somehow free market policies leave people uninsured. In no other sector of the economy does capitalism lead to less access, lower quality, or higher prices. It's the other way around. Right, so we need to bring those principles into healthcare, and more people will have health insurance than they do today.
Well, the plan you're discussing sounds like the perfect answer. Why wouldn't it get political, momentum quickly?
Well, I think the thing is Republicans are reluctant to work with Democrats. You know, I think that the idea they want to do something that they only need Republican votes for, and for something that only needs Republican votes, it's easier to just say, you know what, we're going to repeal Obamacare and replace it with something skinnier, because that's something they can do that's very simple. What I'm talking about is something more ambitious that does require a bit more, you can't do it all through party line votes. So that's where they're starting. But I think that what you've heard the president-elect and soon to be the president say is, look, I want my replacement plan to cover as many people, if not more people, in Obamacare. And if that's your goal, then you're going to have to do something pretty similar to what I've described.
How do you do it without a mandate?
Very simple. You don't need a mandate. Look, if you make health insurance less expensive by getting rid of the federal regulations that drive the premiums up in Obamacare, people might actually voluntarily want to buy health insurance. So make insurance more affordable. And you can also have provisions that, just like with 401ks at your employers, that people have an automatic ability to enroll in a default plan and then opt out if they don't like it. And that way, people who might otherwise not be aware that they have coverage options have them.
What is the incentive for the insurance companies to get on board? Because I have to believe that they have come up with various ways to protect their image. Well, not their images, but their brands.
Well, listen, I mean, insurance companies would like to have more customers, so it's in their interest for the insurance markets to be working well, and they aren't working well under Obamacare because the plans are so expensive and nobody can afford them. So insurers are very open to new ideas about how to make the health insurance market work. I talk to insurance companies all the time because they're obviously concerned about the way things have gone over the last several years. They're open to a conservative or free market-based approach. They have certain considerations that they care about, and you have to take those into account. But at the end of the day, they're not going to be the obstacle. The obstacle is going to be Republicans fighting among themselves and Democrats who want single-payer and nothing else.
A question for you, Avik, about the cabinet nominees. I know you worked with Mitt Romney and Rick Perry. Should anybody be concerned that, say, the Ben Carsons or the Betsy DeVoses, or even the Rick Perrys to an extent, maybe aren't completely 100% knowledgeable about the cabinets they're about to be confirmed into or about to head?
Listen, I don't think anybody who runs a major federal agency is 100% knowledgeable about, you know, what that agency does until you actually do it. These are very, very large organizations. It's like if you're the new CEO of General Electric, you know, you're not going to know every little thing that General Electric does. That doesn't mean you don't hire anybody, right? So you learn those things on the job. But I think the most important thing with these cabinet appointments are, what are their principles? What are their judgment? Are they good executives? Do they have experience running large organizations competently? And to take Rick Perry as an example, this is a guy who ran the second largest state in the country for 14 years, a pretty complicated thing to do, and did it quite well. You know, Texas led, you know, basically Texas had the majority of job growth in the entire country during the Obama years. So I think these are guys who are and gals, in the case of Betsy DeVos, who know what they're doing and are going to be very effective change agents, which is really what you need with these bureaucracies.
So the folks that are listening now and the people that you deal with every day, the question I'm sure you get more than anything else is my insurance going away?
Yeah.
As the plan stands now and what we already know is a fluid operation here, what's it going to look like for people who have Obamacare, regardless of what they're paying for it, in a week or 2 weeks or a month?
Well, nothing is going to change over the next couple of months or weeks and years, because the way Republicans are trying to do this is they're trying to say, yeah, we want to repeal the defund Obamacare, but we're going to keep those funding streams in place for a couple of years until we work out the replacement. Republicans are very much sworn to making sure there's minimal disruption and more choice at the end of this whole process than there was today. So
lazy reporting is really the problem here, because essentially what we're looking at is a political win for Republicans and not a significant change in the near future.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, there's definitely a lot of lazy reporting, a lot of alarmism. And you know, and what's ironic is that that reporting wasn't happening 6 years ago, 7 years ago, when they passed Obamacare. All the reporters were saying, well, all the experts say there's going to be no disruption of your health insurance plans, where people like me were writing all about this in Forbes, where I'm still the opinion editor. So, you know, then eventually they had to concede that there was all this disruption in the insurance market thanks to Obamacare. Think about it this way. If what Obamacare did was it banned a lot of plans that were legal before Obamacare came into law, what Republicans are trying to do is reverse those regulations. So if you want to be on your really expensive plan that covers all sorts of things you don't need, you're free to do that. No one's going to stop you from buying that plan. But what Republicans are going to do is give you choices that you didn't have before that are less expensive, that cover the things you need your health insurance to cover. So it's always less disruptive when you go to a more market-oriented approach versus a less market-oriented approach.
Before I let you go, tell everybody about FreeUp.
So FreeUp is this new think tank, the Foundation for Research on Equal Opportunity, and our mission is to expand economic opportunity to those who least have it using the tools of free markets, free enterprise, limited government, technological innovation. Our view is, and you know this, Steve, capitalism has lifted more people out of poverty than anything else that humanity has ever invented. But we never talk about it that way.
Right.
So our goal is to do the research that can move the needle for lower-income people.
Great to talk to you again. I'm glad we reconnected, and thanks for the work you're doing, because, you know, again, you have this ability to explain this difficult topic very quickly. And I invite everybody to check out FreeUp and continue to follow you at Forbes and there and back here. So enjoy the weekend, and thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Steve. Stay warm.
There you go.
The Steve Cochran Show.
I used to be able to throw a pigskin a quarter mile.
The Wang Dang Doodle.
Are you serious?
Yep. It's happening again.
9/11 and my mother, if you're listening, Mom, we tried to reach you. I know that you could be busy doing another show. But Sandberg will need your picks before sundown. Is that right, before sundown? Well, I guess the games aren't until Sunday.
Yeah.
So she can strategize through Sunday morning.
She can, yeah. Okay. Dave Bennett sent me a text. He's on vacation, but last night he sent me a text, 9:09, with his picks, making sure he got them in.
Okay. Didn't overthink him, did he?
I think it's like he knew what my picks were, and then he stole them, is what I think.
Oh, yeah.
If you want, you can say you didn't get those picks, and then I could pick for Dave. Just throwing that out there.
Okay, good luck to you. All right, who are we starting? Well, hey, remind people the scoring first. Or do you want to talk about the complaint?
I you know what? I won, but I don't want to take away from it being an inauguration day. So, but yeah, I have a complaint. I have a question for you about life.
Okay.
My sister, because of texting now, I just want to know if anyone else has this happening. instead of just calling me when she wants to call me, she sends a text, can I call you in 10 minutes? And then I have to say yes or no. And if I say yes, then I'm like, you know, waiting and waiting. And then she doesn't always call in the 10 minutes, but then she doesn't give a follow-up like, hey, can't call you any longer, whatever.
What's the reason for doing that?
She just wants us all at her beck and call. I'm not sure. But it's so annoying. And I was wondering if, like, does anyone just call anymore? Or does everyone give a, like, she'll say, can I call you tonight? Or can I call you after I get out of yoga? Like, we got to set all these appointments for phone calls.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why people don't just pick up the phone. Just pick up the phone.
Call me, and if you miss it, leave me a message.
That's the way voicemail works.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right, 1,000%. Yeah,
and then she leaves me a message, and I'll say, hey, I left you a voicemail. She'll tell me.
But texting.
Like, I can check the voicemail. I don't need you to tell me you left me a voicemail.
The brilliance of texting and the genius of texting, and I believe this to be absolutely true, has created a fatigue just to make basic phone calls.
Yeah.
People dread making basic connected phone calls. People dread checking their voicemail. They used to be huge. You come home and say, oh, Carm, 1988, the light be flashing on the old answering machine. That was a big day.
Right. That was the best.
Now the worst possible news you could possibly have is your phone telling you have a voicemail you have to check.
Or when it's
full. Oh,
I don't
have the energy. I can't possibly.
And then people never check them.
Or when it says it's full, I'm like, oh, God, now I have to delete all these. But you know what? I find more people not leaving voicemails because I have a couple friends who are like, well, I tried calling you. You didn't call me back. And I said, well, you didn't leave a message. And then one said, well, don't you look at your phone and see your missed calls. You should know that I called and left you a message. I didn't leave you a message.
You know, at least the millennials will text you if they don't get you. In the rare occasion, they might call you and need something.
Yeah, but by the time you get to your voicemail, how many messages do you normally have? Like, be honest.
I float with a dozen.
Right.
You know,
you mean that are in there right now that are saved?
Yeah, there's always 10 or 11 or 12, yeah.
Right. And it is exhausting because by the time that's a 15-minute commitment by the time you because you procrastinate.
Right, because at 15 minutes you could be texting.
Right.
Yeah.
Or on Facebook or on Instamatch.
Sandberg, you're right. You're right. Everyone else is wrong.
All right. I like this.
All right. What's the team score?
The team score. Well, the
wow is Newt Gingrich fat? Holy mackerel, has he gained weight?
He did the maybe it's his holiday weight. Maybe he still hasn't shed the holiday weight.
Did he eat John Boehner? John Boehner, I haven't seen him.
He's standing next to John Boehner.
Oh, he is. Okay.
He just ate the new Big Mac.
Boehner just walked in.
Holy mackerel, Newt's huge.
It is cool. You know, I know you're talking about Newt, but isn't it cool kind of seeing everybody walk in?
Yeah.
I mean, when we saw George W. Bush and he was shaking hands with all the security
guys. I have to say that the soon-to-be President Trump could be a little more decent to his wife, who he stepped in front of and walked in front of about 15 times. I hate seeing men walk in front of women. I think it's incredibly rude.
Well, I couldn't believe he got out of the car and just kind of ran up the stairs, and she was still kind of struggling to get up the stairs, and President Obama had to go and help her up the stairs.
Could you tell Donald to wait for me?
Beautiful dress, though.
Yeah, she looks fantastic.
I learned recently you're supposed to, when you're walking with a woman, you're supposed to be closer to the street to protect them from potential cars jumping on the sidewalk. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice thing to do. That's a minor point.
In the olden days, they used to throw trash out the windows, too, and so it'll fall on you ahead of us or something.
Do you also know that in a revolving door, you're supposed to go first because you're stronger?
Yeah, I did know that.
Push the door open,
but I give a good
her.
Push and then let it. Then you know, get the momentum building, Steve.
So you try to get it going fast, and then you trip her.
Right.
Okay, focus, people. What about the picks?
We're out of time.
I knew this would happen.
All right. So team score.
Team score. The do cares are winning because all the don't cares didn't pick last week, except for me and Mary. Supposedly,
allegedly,
I couldn't find her picks.
All right. So. We're going to let the don't cares go first this week.
Yeah, I'm going to let Mary pick.
And there are two games. You have to pick a quarterback, but because there's only two games to choose from, you have to pick a quarterback, a running back, and a receiver. The receiver could be a wide receiver. It could be a tight end. Okay, a quarterback, a running back, and a receiver, along with a score of the game. Mary first.
Mary Vandeville.
Oh, I'm so excited to go first. Okay, Aaron Rodgers.
Yes.
Whoa. 1 second. Okay.
Write them down. Make sure she's writing them down.
She's writing them down.
Okay. Wide receiver, Julio Jones from the Falcons.
All right.
From running back, how do you say it? Le'Veon Bell? Le'Veon?
Le'Veon.
Le'Veon Bell.
Le'Veon Bell. And Packers over Falcons, 28-24.
Packers 28-24. Very similar to Dave Bennett's picks.
Oh, well.
Not going to lie.
Everybody's going to be similar. There's not many people to pick from.
The tiebreaker will be the score differential.
The score differential.
Okay. Next up, don't cares.
Steve Grzanich?
Not in his chair. Next.
Oh, he's watching the inauguration. God.
Bennett Wegnight, who's not ready to be found.
Bennett not here.
No.
on the cast. Also not.
Wow, your team.
All right.
What is going on? Your team just doesn't care.
You want to tell us Senate's picks?
Yes. He has Matt Ryan, Bell, Julio Jones, New England 27-24.
We've officially traded him to your team, by the way.
England. All right, Mr. Cochran.
Matt Ryan, Julio Jones. I need a running back. How about LeGarrette Blount? And LeGarrette Blount.
Patriots.
And New England 17, Steelers 16.
Ooh!
17.
Gee, what was
16.
That's primal.
Carm's gassy.
Cochran, Dave. Okay, Miss Andrea.
I will go with Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. I will take Blount as my running back as well. My wide receiver is Hogan, and I'm going Patriots over...
Hogan!
Yeah, this is going to be a good one. Patriots over Steelers, 27-24. Carmy.
Good pick.
Everyone's picking like the same spreads. This is going to be a... Mike Jacobson.
Aaron Rodgers.
Because his girlfriend likes him.
Oof.
And by the way, I'm always on the side of the street when we're walking. So if the car does come, my narrow frame could be right in front of her. So she'll
Excellent.
Be safe.
There you could stop a Kia.
Nice.
That's questionable. Maybe a Mini or a Fiat. Mm-hmm. Ty Montgomery will be my wide receiver. Le'Veon Bell will be my running back. Packers over the Falcons, 38-35.
38-35. You know what else?
38-35. Andrea?
Big score.
Hang on. She already picked.
Oh, HRC is walking in?
Yeah.
Here come the Clintons.
The Clintons are walking into the White House. Or the Capitol building, I mean.
Hillary Clinton in a beautiful Ralph Lauren white dress and jacket.
Yep, me too.
It's not a pantsuit?
Me too. And let's do a ceremonial.
I wish it was like Ryder Cup, where all the wives and presidents wore the same outfits. So it was like a team thing.
Oh, like a matching. Yeah.
I would like that.
That would be amusing. Yeah. By the way, I'm wearing my Ryder Cup hat today. My USA Ryder Cup hat. Tell Dick Cheney to take his cowboy hat off? He's in the Capitol.
That is hilarious.
What is that all about?
Ugh.
God. I didn't recognize him. Did you?
I can't stand Democrats and Republicans. How's that for an American?
Come on. It's Inauguration Day.
No, this is a great ceremony. I'm just sorry that anyone who was ever elected has to be there.
You know, Mike, we were talking about him being chivalrous just now, where he walks on the outside of the street to block his girlfriend. Another thing he does is, because we get donuts here a lot, his girlfriend likes donuts, Audrey, so he will snag her a donut and bring it to her because he doesn't eat them.
Isn't that adorable?
It's very sweet.
Do you wrap it up like a little
he does wrap
napkin
it kind of.
And bring it to her?
His girlfriend's name is Audrey?
Audrey.
That's old school, man.
Audrey. I mean, that's like real life right
she's
there.
Beautiful.
Old school classic right there.
Now that we've named her, she's like an actual person.
Vladimir Putin and his mistress have arrived. I don't know where they're sitting.
That's the patriarch. That's the Greek patriarch.
Oh, I thought it was Vladimir Putin and his mistress. Yeah. No.
Actually, no. It's
and let's do a ceremonial selection for Mark Carmen. Mark, you go ahead and make
your
picks.
Oh, that seems...
Unless she wants to add her picks later.
Yeah. No, if she doesn't agree.
And then we'll negate yours.
Can you give us a QB, please?
I will take Matt Ryan.
All right. And we need a running back.
I'll take Devontae Freeman.
A tight end?
I'll take...
Or a wide receiver.
I'll take Martellus Bennett.
Yeah. Bennett.
Kid Marty in there.
Which team is going to win? A team, please?
A team that's going to win. I'll take
you need the full game score.
I'll take the Atlanta Falcons. What did I say, 27-24 earlier? Something like that.
27-24.
Okay. Taking the under in the Falcons. All Let's right. roll.
And your Friday night NJ swipe, how's it looking?
Pretty strong. No, I won't. I'll be
watching.
I'll be quiet, Steve.
Watching the highlights of the inauguration.
I'll be with Arnold the Duck tonight, my favorite stuffed animal who's been with me through the years.
Wow. You know that was out loud. It's 9:21. We're back after this on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Music is a world within itself. With a language we all understand.
Motorcade moving now to the Capitol.
With an equal opportunity for all to
Obama and Trump in the same car. Obama saying to Trump, I can't believe you won. Trump going, I can't believe it either.
But you can tell right away that A when the people start to move. They can feel it all over.
The Cheneys taking their seats. Cheney looks pretty healthy for a guy that's had about 12 heart attacks.
It really does. Wearing a cowboy hat. Taking a seat.
All right, a quick review of how we got here. You think back 18 months ago. Donald Trump comes down the escalator. And the reason I'm bringing this up is, well, for a couple of reasons. One, take a look at the blog I wrote. It's at WGNradio.com, on Facebook at Steve Cochran Show, Twitter at Cochran Show, with advice for the president. And for all of you who think that all I want to do is slam Donald Trump, it's much fun as it can be for me. There's some legitimate advice in there that I hope he follows. And I hope he's hearing it from someone else who he actually listens to. But when you think about how this started, slamming John McCain, a war hero, calling Mexicans rapists, but some of them must be good people, the assaults on women, literally and figuratively, over the course of the 18 months, the mocking of a handicapped reporter, the kissing up to Russia. See, this came down to, in my opinion, a perfect storm. It was a perfect storm of people being sick of Washington at a level that nobody understood, including me, in combination with a guy who would say whatever he needed to say to get their attention. Whether he follows through on these promises, we'll see. But as you know, he's changed on many of these. In combination with the worst Republican field you could possibly imagine. Remember we thought Jeb Bush would be a good candidate? Trump was right. Jeb Bush was a terrible candidate. Mm-hmm. Marco Rubio, terrible candidate. Ted Cruz, nightmare. And those are the front runners. And John Kasich, who was probably the most qualified of the bunch beyond Jeb Bush, turned out to be too tired to finish the deal.
Yeah. Remember Howard Dean, they thought was the great candidate too, and then he kind of went off the rails a little bit.
Well, all he did was yell.
Yeah.
The standards changed a little bit. It's a little higher now.
Right.
So a terrible Republican field, combined with a sickness of Washington, just sick of it, sick of all of them. But the real mitigating factor here is the hatred for Hillary Clinton, rational and irrational. The amount of people in this country, stated or unstated, who just couldn't stand Hillary Clinton, and she ran a terrible campaign, also led to how we got here. Point being of all of this is, Donald J. Trump, if he really wants this job, is unbelievably lucky to be there. The odds were incalculable of all the things that had to go right for him to be able to get there. He had to be the exact guy who could have the exact reputation he has, say all the things he said, say all the campaign things he said, but be up against a terrible Republican field and a horrible candidate in Hillary Clinton.
You're absolutely right. How many times during this whole election season did we say, oh my gosh, he's done it now?
Yeah. Bernie. I was wrong every time.
Yeah. Well, everybody was.
Bernie wins the election, right?
Well, Bernie was blocked by the Democrats.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Bernie against Trump, I don't know, dude.
I don't know.
Bernie's your crazy uncle. He scares a lot of people.
See, I think that she lost for exactly what you just said. People can't stand her because she's establishment. I think Bernie would have taken him
Yeah,
down.
And a lot of the hate for her was irrational. Let's be honest right. about it. Because, yeah. If you stop people and you go, why do you hate her? Well, because she lied.
Right.
Every she lied about time. What? Well, she lied about the emails.
What in the emails?
Yeah,
well,
what
I emails?
I don't know. Yeah. I just know she lied.
Yeah.
You're just sick of the establishment. So we have a non-establishment candidate who is now the non-establishment president. And my hope is, and we were told this by insiders from, November 9th on, that this will be a prime ministerial presidency, meaning Mike Pence, Paul Ryan, to a much lesser extent, I hope, Mitch McConnell.
To a much, much, much lesser extent, Ryan Priebus.
And to a much, Priebus I like.
Even
but
though
Steve Bannon,
didn't think so.
Steve Bannon, no.
Kellyanne Conway,
she's very popular in media circles, but, incredibly annoying. Look, I would like.
And Jared Kushner, too. Don't forget, he's going to have a big
Jared Kushner is going to have a big say. But the point is, I would hope that, because Jared Kushner has no experience in any of this, I would hope that President Trump listens to those closest to him who will give him a measured view of what he should do about things, starting with defense. Mattis is universally agreed is a great choice for defense. General John Allen also seems to be a pretty good choice. Michael Flynn is a security advisor. I salute his service and his heroism. I think he's off the reservation. I mean, he's dangerous, scary. But the team he's put together, including the Secretary of State, yet to be confirmed, Rex Tillerson, and several others, Most of the cabinet picks are pretty good. So you have a choice on how to handle this. I guess that what I'm advising is choose optimism, choose hope. Well, what other choice do you have?
You know,
poll for him, choose hope, and hope that this the weight of the office scares him into doing the right thing.
And I think an instant way to unite the country, or at least bridge the gap, is to go after ISIS. If you focus on terror, think about that. If he was to halfway obliterate ISIS within the first year or even two of the presidency, I think that would really bridge the gap between the naysayers.
Made a lot of strides already. It's teed up for him.
Depends on how he does it. I mean, I don't think there's a lot of appetite for some ground war going on here, something crazy like that.
That's the thing. You commit bodies to any war, it's going to be the blue-collar folks that supported him most whose kids are going to go first, and that's scary. But expect the infrastructure bill, bridges and roads and things like that, to be the first thing to go, and if it does, that's a big deal.
That's
huge.
Logical.
Huge, you think?
It's huge.
Huge.
If we get that.
Be great.
Take a break, come back, get your big story in just a moment. And still to come, Willie Geist at the inauguration. Our pal Willie from NBC coming up. And what is this? 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
It's a movement that started, and it's a movement like we've never seen anywhere in the world, they say. There's never been a movement like this. And it's something very, very special. And we're going to unify our country. And our phrase, you all know it, you're half of you wearing the hat, make America great again. But we're going to make America great for all of our people, everybody, everybody throughout our country.
9:43 live from the greatest city in the world, the greatest radio studio on the planet, live on Michigan Avenue, the greatest country in the world. We're in 1 hour and 17 minutes, the most unlikely candidate in any of our lifetimes. We'll take the oath of the office of the President of the United States. Willie Geist will now tell us we're all going to be okay, live from Washington. Good morning, my friend.
I'm sorry if I'm the one who has to reassure you we may be in deep trouble today, Steve.
Listen, you got one choice today, and that's be hopeful and positive that he will surprise and delight us, and that's the page I choose to be on.
I totally agree with that. We had Nancy Pelosi on Morning Joe just a couple of hours ago, and I was a little bit surprised but encouraged to hear her say her advice to all her Democratic friends and people who are not going to watch today and are freaking out about the idea of Donald Trump. This is Nancy Pelosi said, looked in the camera, said, take a deep breath. Take a deep breath. We're here. The Congress is here. We have a system in place. We're going to oppose Donald Trump where he needs to be opposed. He's not going to run roughshod over us. And she, I thought her message this morning was as important as anybody's to hear Nancy Pelosi, who obviously is a San Francisco Democrat and
as partisan as it gets.
As partisan as it can get. To have her say that, I thought was a big deal. So I'm going to take the take a deep breath page out of the Nancy Pelosi book.
And on Sunday, Willie will sit down with Kellyanne Conway. And God bless her. Listen, I'm the last guy to criticize what a woman wears. I hate when men do it. But she's got a little Captain Crunch thing going on this morning. It's a brave outfit choice, but I think she's going to take some heat for it.
It's a more Revolutionary War type style with the breast buttons.
Oh, it's a throwback.
Yeah.
Throwback all the way back. I only saw it briefly on a monitor. I think she just had the red hat on. Was that Kellyanne? I only saw her.
Yeah. Yeah, she's doing a red, white, and blue thing.
Yeah, I went over to the Trump Hotel at the old train station yesterday and spent about an hour with her and, you know, talked to her about the fact that Donald Trump's coming in with a 38% approval rating, according to the NBC poll, which is about half of where President Obama was when he started 8 years ago. And, you know, about 20 points off the next lowest over the last couple generations, which was Ronald Reagan. And even he was up around 60. So, you know, what does that mean? Why did that happen? What's going on? And she basically said he's been the victim of relentless media coverage, negative coverage, fake news coverage in some instances, and that it took its toll during the transition. And she said, you know, like all the people who doubted him and had him at 1% in the polls when he started to become a political candidate, he will rebuild and prove himself. So she was predictably optimistic.
I could count the number of truly biased negative news stories from legitimate news sources on one hand. he's gotten what he has deserved and what he's asked for, which is why his transition numbers have actually gone down. But he has an opportunity to change all of that today. Now, Kellyanne Conway seems to, I've never met her, but seems to be very well liked in the Washington and New York media communities. Is that true?
You know what? She is she's a decent and charming person. I mean, I enjoy being around her. Whether or not you like Donald Trump, I think most people acknowledge that she's extraordinarily good at her job. Now, what that means sometimes is cleaning up messes and spinning in ways that are defy belief sometimes. But even Democrats I know are frustrated by her. They say, damn, she's so good. How did she wiggle her way out of that one? So she's a fun interview because she keeps you on your toes. You know, you ask her a question and she gives an answer totally unrelated to your question. You got to bring her back to it. But I don't think there's any denying whether or not you like what she's saying or not, that she's good at her job. And yeah, she's, you know, just on a personal level, she's accessible. I would say the Trump campaign has been as accessible as any I've been around. They get back to you quickly. They answer your questions. They're willing to come in front of cameras and answer them. And so, yeah, I like her a great deal. That doesn't mean that you don't have a lot of difficult questions to ask.
Sure.
We did yesterday, and you'll see on Sunday morning.
Sunday Today with Willie Guy starts at 7 a.m. on NBC. Willie does a great job of that, and he's got the ability on a Sunday to do a longer form interview, which he does weekly, and he's great at it. Andrea, say hi to Willie.
Hey, Willie. I know, you know, we're enjoying watching all the festivities. After all the pomp and circumstance after the parade today, what do you think we will see from the new president? An executive order? I know there's all kinds of speculation of what might happen today and into tomorrow as well.
What's he going to do first?
Yeah, what's he going to do first?
Yeah, I think, you know, you will see, he has said, and Kellyanne reiterated yesterday, that that Obamacare is on the chopping block from the minute they walk in there. I mean, it's repeal and replace, but the Rand Paul indicated today on our show that they'll have something ready by Tuesday, a replacement, at which point they would be ready to start to repeal the existing Affordable Care Act and replace it with whatever their program is.
So, we spoke with Avik Roy from Forbes this morning, one of the number one experts in the country on Obamacare, and he said, and he's a Republican, he said this is a Republican political play, and they will win the politics of this. But for people who have insurance, it is impossible to change it by Tuesday or anytime soon. And for that reason, it'll stay largely the same for the next year, possibly 2 years, until they figure out the ultimate answer.
Yeah, I think the line I heard this morning from somebody on our show, maybe it was Jeremy Peters, the New York Times reporter, said, all these claims that Trump's going to turn over the tables in Washington will probably be more rolling thunder than shock and awe. In other words, he's not going to repeal everything in day one and issue executive orders on day one to pull the place apart, but it's going to happen over a period of months. And I think in the case of the Affordable Care Act, over years, you can't just pull the rug out, as you said, from 20, 23 million people who come to depend on Obamacare.
Willie, I don't know if you're a dancer. You know, I tear it up whenever I go to a wedding. But I'm completely serious when I say this. I wonder if Donald Trump is more nervous about taking the job and the first few things he has to do, or about the entire world watching him dance tonight in the first dance with Melania. Because when I look at the Trumpster, I don't see him as a dancer.
No, not. He doesn't move fluidly, for one thing. I don't know that I've seen him dance. Although when he hosted SNL, they had him do. They had him do the Drake video again. That was as close to dancing as I've seen, and it just wasn't pretty. I think he'll be happy to get past that first dance, But what if he came out and he was Fred Astaire, just shocked the
country?
How
about that?
Who knows?
That'd be a great opener. Obama and Trump are now making their way to their positions, and they're going to get underway soon. Where will you be during the ceremony?
I am about a half a block from the Capitol right now. I'm going to make my way over and watch it with my own two eyes as I watched Barack Obama in 2008. It's kind of remarkable to see these two guys standing here, and I think it's a good thing for the country to see. I mean, you consider it was just 4 years ago still that Donald Trump was offering $5 million for anybody who could produce the birth certificate and college transcripts of Barack Obama. And not only, you know, questioning his you know, citizenship, you know, he's not just he was a legitimate president, but a legitimate American.
It's
and now
incredible.
Here is here is President Obama handing the keys to the country over to the man who spoke that way about him for so many years.
Yeah, and continuing along the same theme as the Clintons make their way down the steps to their position, awkward could be the rule of the day here.
Big time.
You know, it's like the great philosopher Yakov Smirnoff always said, what a country.
What a country. I'm watching the same feed you're watching right now, and boy, to watch Hillary Clinton, it's almost a cruel form of punishment to make her sit there and watch
this. What an odd day for her.
But,
yeah, it is a white pantsuit, by the way.
Her.
Long white coat.
Good for her for doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hate to see that. But somebody who won 3 million more votes than Donald Trump and was completely blindsided, let's be honest, on election night as they had the fireworks ready to go and the Javits Center, the glass ceiling was going to be broken, and now here she is doing something she never imagined in her wildest dreams she'd be doing, which is watching Donald Trump become president right in front of her.
Willie, I was there, and
not for one more trip to the Brat Stop in Wisconsin.
Oh, right?
Right?
Come Willie, on. I told Steve, when I was there, it literally went from the biggest party in the country to a funeral.
Yeah.
The mood, the mentality.
Oh, you were there.
She was at Javits.
Yeah, Javits that night, yeah.
Wow, wow. Yeah, I mean, when Podesta finally came out and told everybody to go home, you knew that was... You know,
couldn't
it was game over.
It.
But
yep.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's,
what a
day. It's pretty remarkable. I mean, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, both targets of Donald Trump intensely over the years, and now they're watching him become president. Amazing.
Awkward. Listen, the greatest thing in the world in every other country is envious of it, of us, and appropriately so, when you can take two people who went at each other like Ali and Frazier, who are now smiling and talking to each other, and will peacefully transfer power, the greatest nation on earth. That's what today is about. It's not about an individual. It's about that moment. And we're lucky to live in this country and to be here. No matter where it goes from here, it's a good day, not a bad day. And Willie, we'll let you get back to work. We'll see you Sunday on Sunday Today.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it. Good to see you guys.
See ya. That's Willie Geist. And, of course, he's on Morning Joe every day, too, on NBC and Way Too Early. I think that's Willie's show still, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're now announcing all of the former presidents, and they're making their way to their seats now. George W. Bush and his wife, Laura, are walking in.
How good does Laura Bush look?
She looks fantastic.
All right, we got to take a break. Bill and Wendy coming up.